The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There's never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. I have the honor to be sitting here with Abdu Murray, who has written many books. He's a spokesman for the Christian faith. You can find him at embracethetruth.org, and he has a brand new book out called More Than a White Man's Religion. Provocative title. Abdu, what is the why did you give it that title?
Well, first off is that it's the reason why this book has been written is because there's a social surge, I think, that's running away from the Christian faith because there's a narrative out there, I think a false narrative, that whatever societal ills we face, whether it's racism or sexism, are laid at the feet of the Christian faith. In other words, in the politicization of Christianity, in the polarization of the world right now, whether left or right are using Christianity as weapons or shields, whatever
right,
it is,
right.
There is this perception now that the Christian faith is this white Western imperialistic religion imposed by white Western imperialists on brown people and women to control
right.
them. When the reality is the narrative is exactly the opposite,
right.
is that the Christian faith is this olive-skinned religion that was propagated by North Africans in order to actually effectuate change in the Roman Empire. So anything good, really, in the West that we can say can't really come from the Roman Empire directly. It has to have its roots in the Christian faith. My general thesis is this, is that I believe the Christian message is actually the cure for the very things it's being blamed for. So it's not just a white man's religion, because it is for white men. It's not just a male religion, because it is for men. But it's more than that. It's a system of belief, I think, uniquely and I think demonstrably uniquely for all people, regardless of if you're male or female, and regardless of what your skin tone is or what ethnic background you come from. So I try to tackle the tough passages in the Bible, whether it's slavery passages or it's about passages about women or whatever it might be, and say these things properly understood actually can highlight the value the gospel message brings to all people so that we can actually have whether it's on a systemic level, whether that exists or not, or on an individual level, the gospel message cures what ails us.
Okay, I neglected to read the subtitle of the book. It's More Than a White Man's Religion, Why the Gospel Has Never Been Merely White, Male-Centered, or Just Another Religion. You have the Constitution and the patience, really, to debate these things. A lot of times I find myself becoming so disgusted with the lies, you know, that it's just a white man's religion, it's just a this, a that. And I just think, look, I know that is not only wrong, but kind of offensive because the opposite is true.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't engage because I think it is the case, and this is why you have to have the wisdom. But
mm-hmm.
there, you know, when Jesus talks about cast ye not your pearls before swine, in other words, there are people with whom it's not worth debating or arguing, and you have to have a sense of that because
right.
there are a lot of people, right or wrong, on any issue, they love arguing. And
mm-hmm.
I think arguing is a waste of time unless God calls you to that debate.
Right.
And so you obviously have the ability to do that and have been doing it for decades, obviously, now. But it is important for us to understand why what you say is true.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell us,
mm-hmm.
let's go through some of these arguments. The classic one, I mean, the first thing that I've been talking about lately, because I wrote a book called Is Atheism Dead? It's apologetics.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, listen, if you are an atheist, that's fine, but you have no logical way
mm-hmm.
to say that racism is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You believe in Darwinism, that we are, you know, chance created all these different people, whatever. And it's perfectly logical that some are going to be better and more evolved than others. And so you have no, you don't even have a basis to say why racism is wrong, much less to accuse Christians of being racist. And so, of course, and I say the scripture is very clear
right.
that racism is wrong. It's completely antithetical to a biblical worldview. So that's kind of like a basic way that I look at it. But you go much deeper.
Well, and that's I spend a section in the book talking about where do we actually get this philosophical warrant to be outraged at racism.
Right.
Because the good news is there's plenty of secular people who are outraged at it. And thank goodness and thank God. And I'm so glad. The Bible, by the way, predicts this, that this kind of morality would be imprinted on in your heart because you're made in God's image. There's at least some modicum of this still left in us. So I'm not saying you have to be a Christian in order to view people as equal. And as you've pointed out in your book as well, the point is not that you have to be a Christian to hate racism. The point is you have to actually believe in God, and I think even the God of the Bible, to justify your outrage in the first place.
Well, there's just no doubt about that. That's why I find it funny that, that you know, what you talk about in this book to some extent is that the Christian faith brought all of these good ideas that women and men are equal in God's eyes, that every race is equal to God. These ideas come from the Bible, and they've been adopted by people who are today agnostics and atheists. Mm-hmm. They just don't know where they got it from. So for them, it is tradition.
Yeah.
In other words, they happen to be right, but they have no clue why they're right.
I love that because it's like, why do you think this?
Yeah.
And they say tradition. Well, have you thought it through?
No.
Yeah, and they haven't.
No.
And so we can give them a reason to say, your outrage, I'm so glad you're outraged about this, but here's the justification for it. Here's the basis for it. So I go through a couple of, you know, when you look at, for example, when you think of the classic example of an argument is, well, the Bible condones slavery. Well, it doesn't actually condone slavery. That word, my name, Abdu, in Arabic, actually literally means God's slave. So when you see the word slave, you know, language has univocal, equivocal, and analogical uses. And sometimes if I say the word foot, you don't know what I mean until I say my foot hurt. I could mean a ruler of 12 inch length.
But we could be talking about poetry.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And there's a million things we can be taught. So context is king here. So when the Bible uses the word slave, sometimes it's describing chattel slavery. Other times, but it's never prescribing it. It's never saying you should engage in it. It's talking about servitude, voluntary servitude. And it regulates a process. And what I point out in the book is that, one, it's not based on race in the slightest bit. And so when we see the word slave in the Bible, naturally, because of antebellum Southern slavery or the transatlantic slave trade, we automatically think chattel, race-based slavery.
Right.
And that's not what the Bible's regulating in the slightest bit. It's not involuntary, it's not chattel, and it's not race-based anywhere at all in there. What it is doing is it's regulating an indentured servitude based on a debt someone owes. And when you carefully look at the Bible, it's basically regulating this practice out of existence, actually, because it's trying to get rid of servanthood or servitude altogether, completely. And so you don't see that. Also, it's not race-based, and here's why. When the people of Israel are used as instruments to judge other cultures, it's never because they look different, but it's based on their actions. It's based on what they do. And how I know it's not based on their ethnicity is because Israel is judged by God using those other people to judge Israel when she does the same thing. And so what I try to point out in the book is this, is that what you see God doing throughout the entirety of the Bible is judging people not on the color of their skin, but on the content of their character. And that ought to sound familiar because King didn't pull that out of the sky. Well, I guess he did pull it out of the sky, sort of, because it came from essentially inspiration from the scripture, his theological quirks notwithstanding.
Right, right.
But the point is that the Bible is all about judging people because of their character, not because of their skin tone. That actually dignifies human beings because it says what you do matters. And so this is one area. There's so many more areas, but this is one area that I think is a common misconception of the Bible.
Yeah, no, and this is the other thing too, that people who just want to win arguments, they will, you know, cherry pick verses. And it's obvious oftentimes, and this is why I was saying I often don't have the temperament or the appetite to debate with people, because I know pretty quickly they don't care about the truth. They care about winning.
Yeah.
And I think if you're dealing with somebody who cares about winning, you really can't have a conversation because at some point they're just going to, you know, even if you pin them down,
right.
they're going to wriggle away and change the subject and so on and so forth. But yeah. what you've just said is so important. Folks, I'm talking to Abdu Murray, and the book is More Than a White Man's Religion. You can find him at embracethetruth.org, embracethetruth.org. You can find us at ericmetaxas.com. And did you know you can listen to us on an app on your phone? Yeah. Look it up, Eric Metaxas Show. Get the app. We'll be right back.
Never see what you want to see. Forever cling to the gallery. You take the long way home. You take the long way home. When you're up on the stage, so.
In case you haven't been paying attention, the Biden administration has caused a financial crisis, and they have no clue how to fix it. Oil prices have skyrocketed, and when oil prices go up, the cost of transportation and shipping spikes, leading the prices of goods to rise. And when we're already seeing record inflation, that's the last thing we need. Our economy is in trouble, and you need to take steps to protect yourself. If all your money is tied up in stocks, bonds, and traditional markets, you are vulnerable. Gold is one of the best ways to protect your retirement. No matter what happens, you own your gold. It is real. It is physical. It's always been valuable since the dawn of time. Legacy Precious Metals is the company I trust for investing in gold. They can help you roll your retirement account into a gold-backed IRA where you still own the physical gold. They can also ship gold and precious metals safely and securely to your house. Call Legacy at 866-528-1903 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com.
It's hard to grasp why anyone would keep voting for record inflation, skyrocketing crime, and an open border. Likewise, why would anyone keep funding the left by sticking with the big carriers? Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they want to make it easy for you to try their service. Give them 60 days to show you why I trust them. Right now, when you try Patriot Mobile for 2 months, get your third month free, plus get free activation. They offer nationwide coverage on the best 4G and 5G networks and use the same towers as all three of the major carriers. So you get the same great service while supporting a company that's fighting to preserve our God-given rights and freedoms. Just go to patriotmobile.com/Eric or call their 100% U.S.-based customer service team at 972-PATRIOT. If you're fed up with woke companies that don't care about your values, support a company that does. Make the switch today and get a free month of service plus free activation. PatriotMobile.com/Eric. That's PatriotMobile.com/Eric or call 972-PATRIOT.
Welcome back. Talking to Abdu Murray, the book is More Than a White Man's Religion, Why the Gospel Has Never Been Merely White, Male-Centered, or Just Another Religion. It's interesting. People often, in criticizing Christianity, and again, this is where people, they're sloppy, and I lose patience because they say, well, Christians have done this, and you think, who cares what Christians have done? Have Christians done things that are consonant with their faith or against their faith? Mm-hmm. Because when you say that Christians were slaveholders and they advocated for slavery, Christians are today advocating for homosexual marriage, transgender. In other words, just because somebody says he's a Christian doesn't make what he does or advocates for Christian. And so we have to ask ourselves, you know, who advocated hard against the transatlantic slave trade?
Mm-hmm.
Born again, on fire Christians, not lukewarm churchgoers, but the people who are on fire for faith saw what the scripture had to say. So historically, the argument to me is very strong that when somebody says that, you know, the Bible is pro-slavery, that's another example where I would just say, like, look at the history of the abolition of slavery, the abolition of racism. That comes out of the Gospels, out of the scripture. Anyway.
Well, and, you know, I remember reading your book on Wilberforce, by the way, and the tang, as it were, that the Bible has, that the gospel has this tang that actually changes people and gets them out of this sort of malaise of whatever. I preach the gospel to this congregation and I don't effectuate the world outside of him. Him and the Clapham Sack, they did that. They put feet to their faith, they put hands to their faith, they put words to their faith, and it changed the world for the better, far more for the better. You look at Frederick Douglass, and I have this, there's this wonderful quote that I found of his, and obviously he was a brilliant man, freed slave. He recognized something, and this is so important because oftentimes I think we engage in chronological snobbery, is that we take a look at our current social movements and we say we need to correct a societal wrong. And fine, great. And a lot of people speak, by the way, and I think you're pointing out something really important, by the way. Let me just sidetrack for a moment, is that we can often engage in people who all they want to do is quarrel and not engage in sound argumentation. And you have to know the difference between the two. But I've also noticed that there are people who I think have this, their dander is up, their emotions are up because of either deep-seated hurt or they bought into a narrative that, whether true or not, makes them feel like less of a person or has been you've been told you're less of a person. They buy into certain lies about this kind of thing, and so they speak from hurt. And so their yeah-but syndrome, I call this yeah-but syndrome. It's like when someone says something and they're just waiting for you to stop because they want to say yeah, but, and they keep doing it. It's like a Tourette's almost. It comes from hurt as well. And then you point out something and you say, the current narrative is Christianity is this white, Western, imperialistic, male-dominated religion. And then you look at someone like Frederick Douglass, and he says things like, between the Christianity of this land, of course this meant slaveholding Christianity of the antebellum southern states, between the Christianity of this land and the Christianity of Christ, I recognize the widest possible difference, so wide that to receive the one as good, pure, and holy is of necessity to be the enemy of the other. I love the pure, peaceable, and impartial Christianity of Christ. This is Frederick Douglass. How dare we say that we somehow know better than the man who's gone through what he went through and changed things so much so that at Lincoln's second inaugural address, the first person Lincoln wanted to know, how did I do, was Frederick Douglass. And Douglass says, that was a noble effort. And Lincoln says, there's no one whose opinion I value more than yours, sir. And he loves the impartial, peaceable Christianity of Christ. And for us to now say, outside of this kind of context he was living in, that we know better, I think if we look at the actual book and we look at through the lens of the life of Christ, I think we'll have something revolutionary on our hands.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. Obviously, you know, the whole civil rights movement came out of the churches. It was not a secular movement. Jackie Robinson was a serious Christian. Rosa Parks was a serious Christian, and that's just for starters. And to wipe that away, again, a lot of people are just engaged in sophistry. They just don't like something, and then they kind of ride whatever narrative they can ride. I mean, the critical race theory is Marxist, atheistic. Again, you know, I don't know where – on what basis they get the idea that racism is even wrong, given their atheist roots. It's bizarre. So any event. Well, there's so much more in the book. Well, okay, what about the male-centered issue?
Yeah, and this comes from, obviously, there are certain passages in the Bible where Paul talks about women speaking in churches and other things where, and, you know, the classic one I hear oftentimes is someone will say, well, a woman is required to marry her rapist in the Old Testament, and that seems to make her property, and not only property, but she can be used and abused all they want. Now, these, of course, are divorced from the full context of what's going on here, because even take that, for example, as that specifically troubling in the way it's presented issue, but not when you actually look at it, is women did not have in the ancient Near East at that time the ability to really necessarily fend for themselves in any realistic way. And so what they had to do, if a woman was in fact abused like that, she would go and she would go back to her father or her family and they would help to take after her. But no man was really going to marry her after that. It was over for her. And so if she was left to her own devices, she was probably going to starve to death. So what the Bible requires is not that she lives with this man, but this man can no longer marry another person. He's got to take care of her for the rest of her life. And he doesn't even get the privilege of living with her. She can live with her dad all, you know. So there's actually a wonderful way in which people are taken care of, and the victimizer is required for
recompense. I mean, if I didn't believe in the Christian faith, just based on what you're saying, you go, that is amazing. This is, we're talking more than 3,000 years ago, this level of justice, astonishing stuff. We're talking to the author of More Than a White Man's Religion, Abdu Murray. So let's just continue along this issue of women in the Bible. It is amazing to me, as I just said, how so many centuries ago, millennia ago, you find in the Bible this incredibly high ethic that didn't exist anywhere on the planet at that time outside of the Jews. It really is one of the most compelling arguments for the Bible as divine.
Well, you know, Leslie Newbegin has this phrase, you know, he says that the Bible is eternally contemporary. I love this phrase because it suggests that it's always relevant at all times for all people, even though it's also specifically relevant for certain people at certain times. It has this historic root, but this pan-temporal application. And Jesus, as the central figure, does this as well. So you look at the Old Testament and you think to yourself, it's male-centered. Really? Well, you have whole books of the Bible named after women. You have Esther. Mordecai is a hero in the book of Esther, but so is Esther. Not only is she a hero, but she's actually a hero who's willing, and you follow this to its logical conclusion, you'll see a foreshadowing here. She's willing, for the sake of the life of her people, to risk her life because she's got to walk into the king and of Persia and basically come unannounced, which was a crime. And if he didn't raise his scepter to her, she would lose her life. She was not summoned by the king. She's trying to foil a plot to destroy the Jews, and she needs to bust into the king's chamber in order to do this unannounced. And she does it. She risks her entire life for the sake of her people. In other words, and it works out well, Esther is, in some senses, a foreshadowing of a Messiah type.
I was going to say, it's what an amazing thing.
And a woman.
That a woman in the Old Testament is doing something that's a foreshadowing. You know, if it was a male-centered religion, I'd cut that out.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only would you cut that out, but then take go all the way to the chief miracle of the Christian faith, which is the resurrection. And women were the first witnesses of the resurrection. Now, if you were making this story up, if you were faking this idea that Jesus rose from the dead, the people you would label to be the first witnesses would be Peter or James or John, or even people no one talks about, like Philip or Bartholomew. You'd have one of those guys be the first witnesses. You certainly wouldn't have it be his women followers, unless you're recording it as it actually happened. And so God not only uses that to that testimony to vault the credibility of the story for us as well, but he gives women the ultimate compliment of saying, you get to be the first ones to see what this was all about. And it was to women, not men. And now men propagated it, but women were given an equal seat at the table.
I mean, I've talked about this myself. It's pretty astonishing. There's evidence, you know, throughout the scriptures, but especially in the gospels, that if someone made this up, they never would have done it this way.
Yeah.
Because I'm I'm a writer, I've written fiction, and you don't create trouble for yourself. You would be creating trouble for yourself if you're making this up and you'd say, and three women showed up, why would you do that?
Right.
You just keep it simple. And there's so much of that kind of evidence, which is one of the things that leads me to believe that, you know, if you're serious about truth, whoever you are, I dare you to be honest and look at what it says and reason with yourself. Does it make sense that this is made up, that this was changed? There's so many quirks and things that anybody would have, you know, I would have sanded down those edges before I put it out for publication.
Right.
We'll be right back talking to Abdu Murray.
We go on sneaking around smoky places.
I like knowing exactly where my meat comes from. And with Moink, that place is from small family farms all across the country. You can help save the family farm and get access to the highest quality meat on earth when you join the Moink movement today. Moink delivers grass-fed and grass-finished beef and lamb, pastured pork and chicken, and sustainable wild-caught Alaskan salmon straight to your door. Moink farmers farm like our grandparents did, and as a result, Moink meat tastes like it should. The Moink difference is a difference you can taste, and you can feel good knowing you're helping family farms stay financially independent, too. Moink is helping save rural America. I love it, and you will, too. Join the Moink movement today. Keep American farming going by signing up at moinkbox.com/Eric right now. And listeners of this show get free filet mignon in every order for a year. That's 1 year, the best filet mignon you'll ever taste, but for a limited time, spelled moinkbox.com/Eric. That's moinkbox.com/Eric. moinkbox.com/Eric.
Tell me, Eric, why is Relief Factor so successful at lowering or eliminating pain? I'm often asked that question. The owners of Relief Factor tell me they believe our bodies were designed to heal. That's right, designed to heal, and I agree with them. So the doctors who formulated Relief Factor for them selected the four best ingredients, yes, 100% drug-free ingredients, each helps your body deal with inflammation. Each of the four ingredients deals with inflammation from a different metabolic pathway. And that right there, approaching from four different angles, may be why so many people find such wonderful relief. So if you've got back pain, shoulder, neck, hip, knee, or foot pain from exercise or just getting older, you should order the three-week quick start discounted to only $19.95 to see if it will work for you. It works for me. It has for about 70% of the 500,000 people who've tried it and have ordered more. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to find out about this offer. Feel the difference.
We're back with Abdu Murray. The book is More Than a White Man's Religion. And speaking as a white man, I'm offended. Okay, so people can find you at embracethetruth.org. Let's talk more about this, because you've spent decades debating people. You're a master of the field of apologetics. Why did you feel the need to make this case now?
Well, I've looked at the questions as they've come to me on secular campuses, in halls of business, halls of government. My big thing is I'll give a talk, but I really like to do the Q&A. That's where I think real ministry happens, where it really begins to become effective. In fact, the more personal you get, the more decisions you find made. So from a talk to a Q&A, that's one-on-one, well, in front of a crowd, to the down at the bottom of the dais where people are talking to you, to the personal phone call that follows, you get more and more of a commitment to find out the truth. But what I've noticed is something that's really interesting is the questions have started to change. It used to be the case, you go to a secular campus and they'll come to the microphones and they'll say, how can I trust the Bible when Luke seems to have gotten it wrong? Was Lysianus really Tetrarch of Abila, as he seems to suggest? that kind of stuff.
I love those kinds of questions. I laugh just because there's some people that are so in those, details.
Yeah, in the minutiae.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. How about science and faith? Hasn't science obviated the need for God? What about evolution? Did Jesus really rise from the dead? Do we know King David existed? These are all propositional truth issues,
right.
Some philosophical,
right.
But some factual, historical stuff. And these are great questions. People are still asking those questions. However, what I've noticed is they're no longer the primary questions. The primary questions on secular universities and in various areas are no longer philosophical or propositional. They're moral. So people aren't asking the question primarily, is Christianity true? The primary question they're asking is Christianity moral? And so the need, I think, given since the death of George Floyd, and it became a global phenomenon, this is not an American issue. This is a global issue now, where people are talking about race equality, the Me Too movement, and all these things. These are the primary questions. And I think when you study what the Apostle Paul says in Colossians chapter 4, when he says, walk in wisdom toward outsiders, making the best use of the time. Now, as a Mediterranean Jew, he's got, I share this affinity with him. We're not the most efficient conversationalists. We spend an hour and a half saying hello to people. So Paul's not saying make the best use of the time by being efficient. He's saying answer the questions they're actually asking. And then he says, let your speech be gracious, seasoned with salt, so you may know how you ought to answer each person. He doesn't say each issue, each controversy, or each question. So I take that as a cue for me as an apologist. I'm not in the question answering business. I'm in the person answering business. Questions don't need answers. People need answers, and they use their questions to get them. So when I see the cultural shift saying that we're dealing with issues of racial equality, we're dealing with issues of gender equality, and the Bible might be the cause for all of our issues, I'm looking at a person and saying, what is it about you that if I answered and showed through the life of Jesus as the lens through which we see the corpus of the Scriptures, to say this is what actually gives you value, dignity, and what has been responsible for some of the biggest and best changes in society, how can I speak through your pain to you, answer not your question, but answer you? And so the reason why I thought this book was urgent is in this cultural moment, propositional truths, I think, will bubble to the surface when we answer the moral and the hard issues as well. you are required, I think, as a Christian, to answer people where they are.
You remind me of my late friend John Rankin. He would do these debates, these things called Mars Hill Forums. Mm. And he really had the ability to talk to people where they were. Mm. He was just extremely brilliant, but also had that heart. And as Christians, we realize it's not just about truth. It's about truth and love. Like, mm-hmm. there's no way as Christians we can simply be about truth, because the one who says, "I am truth," is love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a difficulty for some people, because we've all known people who, as I said earlier, they love to argue, mm-hmm. they love to win, they love to be right. They don't seem to care about the soul of the other person. They almost seem to take a delight in, ha-ha, you're wrong, you're out.
Yeah.
And I think if that's your spirit, that's not the spirit of Jesus. The spirit of Jesus longs to communicate this truth to someone, even at self-sacrificial price.
Absolutely. You know, people often misunderstand apologetics as this, what are you being sorry for? What are you saying you're sorry for? And of course, the word really means defense. But I think there's too many people who are engaged in the process of apologetics, whether it's Christian apologetics or political apologetics or whatever, and they don't make it the art and science of Christian persuasion. What they've turned it into is the art of making someone sorry they asked.
And that's funny. Come on. That's very funny. I'm sorry.
So I think that's the heart of it, is that, you know, if you can speak to, and you were talking about it before, about it being true and it being beautiful don't have to be exclusive things. It can be beautiful because it's true, and it can be truly beautiful. And I think that, you know, Pascal said it so long ago when he said that men despise religion because they fear that it may be true. The trick is to show them that religion is worthy of respect and reverence. Next, he says, make it attractive, make good people wish it were true, and then show them that it is. And I think one of the reasons why Christians tend to be a little bit behind in the culture war is because we're not making them wish it were true. This story, this book, and so many other great books that have been written about the Christian faith, they tell a better story. And for some reason, we're losing the fact that we're just saying, here are better facts, here are true facts.
Right.
That's great.
Right.
But they need not only the facts, but the better narrative.
This guy's singing my song. We'll be right back with the final segment with Abdu Murray.
Sparkling earrings lay against your skin so brown, and I want to sleep with you in the desert tonight with a billion stars all.
With the overturn of Roe v. Wade, lots of companies are coming out saying they'll pay for employee abortion travel and expenses. Most of you have heard about some of these companies. You've decided to stop shopping or doing business there. But did you know that you most likely own stock in those companies through your 401ks, IRAs, and other investment accounts? Folks, this is a huge problem, and we need to do something about this to send a message to Wall Street through our investments. You need to go to InspireAdvisors.com/Eric and get a free Inspire Impact Report. This biblical investment analysis will educate you on what's really in your investment accounts, like companies paying for abortion travel. You need to go to InspireAdvisors.com/Eric to connect with an Inspire Advisors financial professional who can run your report and help remove companies paying for abortion travel today. Go to InspireAdvisors.com/Eric. That's InspireAdvisors.com/Eric. Advisory services are offered through Inspire Advisors LLC, a registered investment advisor with the SEC.
Hey, folks, you've all helped build MyPillow into the incredible company it is today. Now, Mike Lindell, inventor and CEO of MyPillow, wants to give back to you, my listeners. So right now, MyPillow is offering exclusive offers on their bed sheets, their six-piece towel set, and even offering an extended 60-day money-back guarantee. Orders placed now through December 25th will have an extended money-back guarantee through March 1st. The bed sheets are marked down as low as $29.98. Believe me when I say you'll get a great night's sleep. Their six-piece towel set is made with USA cotton. It comes with two bath towels, two hand towels, and two washcloths. Typically retails at $89.98, now just $39.98 with promo code ERIC. Limited supply, so be sure to order now. Call 1-800-978-3057, 1-800-978-3057. Use promo code ERIC or go to MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener square, use promo code ERIC. These offers will not last long. They're known to sell quickly, so order now with promo code ERIC at MyPillow.com, MyPillow.com, promo code ERIC. Welcome back. Talking to Abdu Murray. You can find him at embracethetruth.org. The book is More Than a White Man's Religion. What you were just saying really is so close to my heart, this idea that it's not enough to be right. Mm-hmm. If we're right about something, if we're talking about truth, truth is beautiful. Mm-hmm. It is compelling. It is heartbreaking. It is filled with love. It's a different kind of truth. It's mm-hmm. not just propositional. It's not just enlightenment rationalism. Mm-hmm. It's a person. Mm-hmm. And so you were just saying you think the reason Christians have been behind in the culture wars has to do with that, and it's what I see, that many Christians have adopted this kind of enlightenment, so it's not really fully Christian worldview with regard to truth.
Yeah, I think, and the part that's really tragic is the Bible is so dripping with these deep truths that are beautiful that we miss it. So I'll give you a quick example of this. It's like you look at the Mary and Martha story, right? So typically when you see in a sermon in a church, you hear the Mary and Martha story. You know, Jesus and the boys are coming over for dinner. And like good Middle Eastern hospitality driven people, Mary and Martha want to make sure the feast is good enough for the guys and they're taken care of. Well, Martha's busy at work. Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet, and she's learning from Jesus. And Martha, of course, gets frustrated and says, Jesus, please tell her to help. Don't you care? She left me to do all the work. Please tell her to come help me. And, of course, Jesus says, you know, Martha, you're worried about many things. One thing is better, and she's chosen what is better, and these kind of things. And the moral of the story, and this is true, is you need to stop and smell the Messiah once in a while. Don't get so busy with life that you forget to spend time with Jesus. Even Christian ministry can get busy and all that stuff. And that's wonderful, and that's really true part of message of what's going on there. But then I take a look at the context of the fact that women weren't allowed in education. Even in a sort of a first century rabbinic Jewish tradition, they weren't allowed the education to sit at a rabbi's feet, which is not a pejorative. It actually was an honorific to sit at a rabbi's feet. And Mary is sitting at the rabbi of all rabbis' feet. And Martha, this is the part that really is so beautiful to me. Martha is so acculturated. She's so used to being put in her place. A woman's place is in the kitchen or with a spindle, and that's it. She's so used to this that when she sees a woman break out of the mold and sit at a rabbi's feet, she's enraged. Because you notice the question. She says, Jesus, don't you care? Tell her to come help me. You know what she didn't ask? Jesus, come help me. Because Jesus is not supposed to be in the kitchen. Women are in the kitchen. She's so acculturated to this. And Jesus sees you have been so swimming now in this idea that you're not entitled to an education that you're outraged when you see someone else who's getting an education. And he says, Martha, you're worried about many things, but Mary has chosen what is better. Only one thing is needful. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her, not even by you. In other words, the culture has deprived Mary of an education, and you're so swimming in it that you're willing to do so as well. Mary, Martha, what I have for you is better, and I'm not going to let you take it away from yourself.
I've never thought, maybe I've heard it and I forgot, but to think of the Mary and Martha story as a pro-woman story, as a radical story that Jesus 2,000 years ago is letting a woman be part of his inner circle and hear his teaching, that's radical. And I think, you know, part of what you're doing in your own apologetics and in the book More Than a White Man's Religion is we have to – really educate people about the history and the context and say, folks, you've got to look back. Look how insane this is. There's nothing like this going on 2,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. Find me in all of ancient literature, certainly not among the Greeks. Come mm-hmm. on, find me anything like this. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that compares to it.
Historian Michael Kruger actually made the point. He said the ancients, the cultural elites, especially among the Romans and the Greeks, were making fun of Christianity in the early centuries as the religion of women and children because women were flocking to it. They were flocking not just to it, but away from something. They were flocking away from a paganistic worldview that treated women as property. If they weren't fully property of their fathers or their husbands or their brothers, they were at least semi-viewed as property of their husbands, fathers, and brothers. And they were flocking to this man, Jesus. And then the church that he birthed after that Why would they do that if it was inherently denigrating to them? They were running to it, so much so that the pagans were saying, this religion of women and children is not going to last. And, of course, the joke's on them, because not only did it outlast them, you know, I can't remember who said it, but the Bible often rises up to outlive its pallbearers, that the Roman Empire changed. Tom Holland, not the Spider-Man guy, but the historian in writing Dominion, he set out to point out that everything good we have came from Rome, and he found out Rome was a dark, awful place until the birth of the Christian faith within Rome birthed ideas of equality. And it goes right to the heart of the message. We're all equally sinners, but we're all equally offered redemption.
I always wonder, Tom Holland, who wrote the book Dominion, is he a Christian, or did he just write about Christianity from a positive position?
So I've heard different stories about this, and I think it's more of on the verge of it, and he might be. I don't know, but I think he has a tremendous affinity and respect and love for the Christian faith.
Well, I mean, there's so many people who are not officially Christians who do, like my friend Dennis Prager. I mean, it's just when you're honest about what happened when you're looking at the Roman Empire. I mean, the Roman Empire was a nightmare of cruelty. It's impossible for us to comprehend how cruel the ancient world was. And for Christianity to come out of that, and now we kind of take it for granted, like, oh, yeah, we're all nice people. Well, no, the culture has not been very nice.
We're importing something.
We just have less than a minute left. Final points. More Than a White Man's Religion is the book.
If we look through the life of Jesus as the lens to look at the Bible, but also all of history and all the things that we actually cherish, equality amongst ethnicities, equality among women and men, I think that if we look to this man, I think he once again becomes the paradigm as the cure for that which oftentimes his followers have been blamed for. But we need to focus our lens on him. He remains our eternal contemporary. And so the things that are plaguing us now, I think, can be fixed if we fix our eyes on the one who can fix them for us.
That's a pretty good summation. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking to Abdu Murray. The new book, there are so many, but the new one is More Than a White Man's Religion. You can find Abdu at embracethetruth.org. You can find us at ericmetaxas.com. Abdu, just a joy to be with you. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Baby, what a big surprise. Right before my very eyes. Oh, 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 oh. Yesterday it
Folks, welcome back. This is hour two. It just gets better and better. I want to mention a couple of things to look forward to. SalemNow.com, as you know, at SalemNow.com, there's all kinds of good stuff to watch. There's a TV series called The Border Battle. If you want to know why you need to care about this country and about borders and want to understand that, and every American needs to understand what is at stake, folks. We got to educate ourselves. We just talked to Steve Dace about that, that we can't just sit back. We have to be involved. This is our country. You go to SalemNow.com, Border Battle. It's a TV series. I also want to mention No Vacancies, which is a true story. Alvin, it's a true story.
Yes, it is a true story. You know, I worked at St. Paul's House for years and years and years, and I volunteered there, and I did, you know, helped out in the neighborhood. Well, No Vacancy is a true story about a church that got involved with the homeless, getting people set up in homes, and it's really incredible. You have to watch it. No Vacancy.
Salem.
Sean Young is in it. Okay, she's in that. And, of course, Dean Kane, who was Superman. That's great. Right there.
SalemNow.com is where you'll find that. I also want to tell people the Socrates in the City event on December 6th in New York City is really special. Oz Guinness, who without Oz Guinness, there would be no Socrates in the City. And so this is a really, really special event. Christmas, of course, gets really beautiful in New York City. If you're inclined to come visit, or if you can drive here from wherever you live. But it's so exciting that we got Oz Guinness. I was just hoping, because he's got a couple of books out recently that I've been dying to talk to him about at a Socrates in the City event. It's going to be at the Union League Club. It's gorgeous. Go to SocratesInTheCity.com, SocratesInTheCity.com, December 6th.
SocratesInTheCity.com. I also, Albin, should mention, I think I mentioned at the beginning of the hour, this week I'm going to be at Mar-a-Lago for President Trump's announcement. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be on TV. I assume it'll be televised. I will be there by God's grace alone, and I'm aware of that. I will try to report on that tomorrow. It's tricky because I'm traveling tomorrow again, going to Leesburg, Virginia, and then after that, going to Colorado for a couple events. So it's going to be tricky. But tonight, that's the plan. I'm supposed to be at Mar-a-Lago for the president's announcement. I am, for one, tremendously excited about that. I'm also excited about the fact that on Wednesday, I will be in Leesburg, Virginia. Pastor Gary Hamrick is going to be interviewing me about the state of the country and about my book, Letter to the American Church, which is selling unlike any book I've ever written. I never wrote a book and that right out of the gate, it was selling very well. Letter to the American Church has obviously struck a nerve. People keep saying, can I buy several copies? I want to buy copies for pastors in the area. And I think, well, that's why I wrote it. So I'm trusting God is using the book. So I'm going to be in Leesburg. If you go to my schedule at my website, ericmetaxas.com, you can see everything. I'm going to be in Fort Collins, Colorado, Friday night. That's a huge event. I want to encourage anybody in the Colorado area. I'm doing something in Englewood on Thursday night, and I'm doing something in Fort Collins on Friday night. If you know anybody in that neck of the woods, please let them know, because I just love connecting with folks who listen to this program. I will sign books until I pass out, and I never pass out. So please go to MetaxasTalk.com and check that out. And if you can get there, believe me, I will be just delighted to meet you. I will be there in line signing books, taking pictures, whatever it is. It's just a joy for me, frankly, to meet people who care about the same things I care about. We can encourage each other. So go to ericmetaxas.com. I think that's it. Hour two. Oh my gosh.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.